Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning, everyone. Hope you're doing fine. If there's any questions or whatever from last week, there was a couple of requests to continue with the way of realization from last week. So if there is anything from that, we can finish that up, or I can go on to another koan. So you've got a bit of a choice here. Of course, all of this is about being, and talks are just really about encouragement. So encouragement to do what? You gotta see. Hopefully to really look into your own nature. Anyway, so we've got a hand up. Dan, carry on.
Hi, Roshi.
Hi, Dan. And thanks for the photo.
Thanks
for the photo, yeah.
You're welcome. I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about the line from Way of Realization. Mm-hmm. Being confused about this, we look all around were the answers.
Yeah. Yeah. Are realized through practice, right? Or something like that, or realized. That's one of the things is that deep inside I had an expectation that life would be a certain way, and I would overlay that over my life. Now, when I stopped doing that, then I stopped being confused about this. I didn't have expectations that it should be a different way. And I see that over and over. It's not just with me. That was with many people. And that's where the confusion comes from. It's really just bringing in ideas, notions, and beliefs about this rather than experiencing it as it is. And then instead of waiting for that to change, it's more like engaging in that and seeing, what can be practiced and realized in the midst of that. So that's where that line comes from. And just invariably, the realizations that I've had as a human being have always brought me back down to this. Clear without doubt, and that's the most important thing. So that's another aspect of practice realization is once that is clear and without a doubt, don't bring in confusion in that way. And then if there are elements of confusion, some things are definitely confusing, then really watch, look, see what's actually going on. And in time that confusion ceases because you see that, definitely there is a mystery here or something can be done about it on that level. Yeah, sorry, I couldn't give you anything, deeply esoteric.
Roshi, yeah. That's great. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's good seeing you.
Likewise.
All right. So, anything else from that from last week?
It's Tom.
Roshi?
Yeah, Tom. Yeah, great.
Sorry, I don't know how to use the raise one's hand.
We recognize you, so that's good.
Thank you. Thank you for tolerating me. How much I am moved by Way of Realization because we've mm-hmm. communicated on a more specific couple mm-hmm. of lines. I'd love some input from. And if you hadn't mentioned that this basically means compassion, or we're talking compassion here. Connection apparent, identity action.
Yeah.
It's a, to me, it's a fabulous, fabulous line. But if you hadn't said something about compassion last week, I don't know if I would have really connected with it. First of all, is there historical reference to the connection apparent identity action? I think I've heard of. And we know, of course, as one foot following the other. Can you?
No, I think that's more of a, you know, it comes through Maizumi Roshi's lineage, and I know Tetsugen used it sometimes too, Tetsugen Roshi. It's also again just because compassion in many ways has become a cliche. So this is it. I'm not saying that people don't practice compassion, but it's quite often bantered around like compassion, and people don't really understand it. But that identity action is seeing oneself as others, right, and then acting in accord that way. It's sort of, it makes you think or try and apply it. What's he talking about? And that's important. You know, it's like I remember when we were doing translations at Stanford University on standard Soto translations, there was a line in the Fukan Zazengi that said, literally, be blocked by Zazen, you know? And I went, wow, what a line, you know? And I remember that. And then there's some people from some of the other traditions, and they were going, you can't say that. People take this negatively, you know, like you're blocked by Zazen, you can't get past it. But literally, you know, I mean, it was it's one of those things that is a visual kind of thing. Like if you put your hand in front of your face, is no matter where you look, there it is, you know. And so it's like everything everywhere is Zazen. But people couldn't quite take that phrase. They were, you know, it's how that would be understood en masse. So language can be used in ways that kind of wake you up. It's like, what is that? And those are the best things for me, is that those pieces that actually go, wait a minute, that's, he's not saying this like you would usually say. You know, it's like, I also, a bit later on, I mean, earlier on, I used, there is no place in the mind unreached, you know, which is not good English, but it makes you, it strikes you in a way that I've got to look at this in a different way. Maizumi Roshi would do that too. He would mess with the English language because he was a foreigner, you know, and he understood that the language was very flexible. And so he put it in these odd ways and you'd be, oh yeah, you can say it in that way, you know? And again, is that in terms of your own appreciation of life, which again is what practice is about, is that, how can I convey this in ways that are not just going along with the ordinary type of things? It's like, how can I bring something in that will wake somebody else up to a fact, or even wake myself up? How can I express this? That's why, you know, there's so many koans. And then one of those koans is going to really hook you in a certain way. But, you know, this also goes back, I mean, this line, connection apparent, there is no
identity action,
there is, well, how does it?
Connection apparent.
Connection apparent, identity action is as natural as one foot following the other.
Yeah, I remember after a few years of practice, I got some friends that had come down from Northern California up near where you are. And we decided to go off to El Jarito, which was just down the road from ZCLA, probably about 5 or 6 blocks away. And we were walking, and then suddenly I saw this guy, and he looked like he was on PCP. He was stopping cars and almost getting run over by them. And then this one guy slowed down to see what was going on, because he thought he might hurt him. And the guy opened his door, and then he started going along the road with this guy on, you know, on the side of his door. And then he realized, you know, this guy's really high, so I'm going to get out of my car. So he got out of his car and went off somewhere else. This guy climbed through his car, went on the other side of the road. And my friends were going, come on, we've got to go. We've got to leave. But I couldn't. I just couldn't. I knew I had to do something, but I didn't know what to do. And so then he walks on the other side of the road, and I'm sort of shadowing him, you know, 30, 40 feet away, because I know that people on PCP are very strong, you know, so just waiting for an opportunity. Then the guy walks into the side of a van going down the road at about 30 miles an hour, boom, like this. And I'm getting closer and trying to do something. And then eventually just breaks his bottle and just sticks it in his neck. Then I could do something because he was incapacitated. I couldn't do much before that point. But it's just like, what can I do? How do I react in that way? And eventually, you know, then this other guy that was there started to put a tourniquet around his neck, and I'm going, you can't do that, you know. So then I could really start to help at that point. So put pressure points in and stuff, and then could. But the main thing is not the story, and the story is kind of, you know, a little bit extreme in that way, but I could actually do something at that point and then help the guy. But there was that thing is that I can't just leave it. It needs to be done in one way or another. And that was the important thing. It was just that I knew I had to do something, but I didn't know what. And it's, you know, that's more that sense of compassion. It's like, well, I'll get a reward if I give him something, you know. People will regard me as, rather than, you know, this is something that's arising from part of me that's a lot deeper, and it needs to be fulfilled in that way.
Well, it is it's going to become a koan for me, and I appreciate and I understand about how we gloss over the word compassion. So I'm extremely grateful for these two lines and for the whole way of realization. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for the feedback, too. Yeah. How are we doing?
I don't see anybody else at this point.
Okay. Well, we just finished session. But in, you know, on one level, you never finish session. It mainly means uniting the mind, so bringing the mind back together. That's ongoing. I mentioned Tetsugen Roshi, and I didn't have an awful lot of contact with him when I was growing up in Zen, because he left about 2 months after I'd arrived. He probably saw me coming and decided to leave, you know. But no, it's not that personal. But I remember as a young monk, he came back after about being away for about a year. And he'd been doing a lot of social action and really developing his bakery and the Greyston mandala of all kinds of activities. And he said, oh, he wasn't doing an awful lot of formal stuff. You know, most of it was really doing the social action. I said, don't you miss session? And he said something really cutting. He goes, my life is session. You know, and that really struck me very, very deeply. And it's just like, okay, well, you know, that's a possibility then. So then I started to follow that. And then as part of all of this, you know, it's like whenever I talk about a koan, is that I'm always cognizant of the fact that people actually did these things. Human beings interacted with one another in these ways. And that's important. Like, there's all kinds of interactions that we go through. And in many ways, those interactions are koans, you know, in the, what was he saying? How could I have said that better? Could that have been relayed in a different way? And there's always sort of, you know, the scenarios are always different. And the important thing is being awake to each thing. To each circumstance that's going on, because again, there's no shortage of teachings. You know, these teachings are going on 24/7, It doesn't matter with who. And the important thing is to learn from whatever is arising. So I picked up a koan, and the context of this, you know, there's always a context in the background, is that there was a master called Kyozen, who was the student of Isan from, I think it's about the 9th century, you know, close enough. And he invented a scheme of symbols. He used these for teaching. You know, I mean, there's just labels and stuff like that, you know, like the 10 Oxford in pictures, puts that in. And then these things get understood by people, and then people will use those schemes in whatever way. You know, just like we do with games nowadays, you know, each game has its rules. It's important you know the rules. And then there's certain freedom within those rules. And then it becomes a bit easier to communicate with us on those levels. So anyway, this is Kyozen Holds His Own, the preface to the assembly. It's like a person who tries to draw emptiness. No sooner does he use the writing brush than he goes wrong. How is it possible to bring forth the pattern or make a model? How is it possible? Have already revealed the stopper. If there are rules, then cite the rules. If there are none, then give an example. And the main case, and it starts off like every single case in this 100 case collection. Attention. A monk asks Kyozen, priest, don't you know characters? And of course he does. He goes, Kyozen says, I hold my own. At that, the monk circled him once clockwise and then said, what character is this? Kyozen drew the character of a cross on the ground. Let's see, where are we? Then the monk circled him in a counterclockwise direction and said, what character is this? I mean, they're having fun here. You have to remember this. What character is this? Kyozen modified the cross so that it was a swastika. Now, that doesn't mean fascism in this case. Don't worry about that. That means the movement of oneness. Okay. The monk drew a circle in the air and raised his hand palms above to give the appearance of an Asura, like Atlas, supporting the sun and moon, and said, what character is this? Kyozen drew a circle around the swastika, and the monk gave the appearance of a fierce temple guardian. Not very fierce, I'm afraid. Kyozen remarked, just so. Keep it and maintain it well. The appreciatory verse. And the priestly verse is always written in appreciation for the case. And quite often each line matches a line in the koan. The void inside the ring of the way is never filled. The character for the seal of emptiness has never been revealed. Marvelously orbiting the wheel of heaven and the axis of earth. Mysteriously stringing together military warp and literary woof. Releasing, opening, kneading, gathering, standing alone, going anywhere. So this is their play that they're putting forward, and both of them really, you know, they know characters. They're well-accomplished people. One of the reasons that I'm bringing this up is that, you know, it's just like with the way of realization and any writing that you read, basically, it's about something. You know, it's not the actuality. So when I, you know, when I read, say, Dogen's writings, I know it's about something. You know, when he says, like in the title, actualizing the fundamental point of whatever, you know. So then I start to think about that rather than, you know, usually what happens is I come back to this. What is actualizing the fundamental point, bringing that back to the place that I stand? Now, the problem with koans or any writings by somebody else is that we then begin to intellectualize it, take it in many different directions, rather than, again, drive ourselves back to the place that we stand. I mean, how do I say something about this? I mean, the reality here is different than your reality, except the one who sees through these eyes, he hears through these ears, is directly reflecting whatever the environment is, of whatever's going on. That's something that can be talked about in a broad sense. How we see it, you know, then is another aspect. What kind of aspects we bring into this is another aspect of being this at this moment in time. But for some reason, as human beings, we like to say, raise that up or elevate it. Otherwise, we tend just to take things as business as usual. This week, Gavin gave a talk and he talked about boredom. You know, so I mean, the world is always like this, and but then we add other things. You know, it's like if nothing special is arising, then our mind might get bored and start to wander off into various areas or realms. You know, it's kind of interesting. Again, the first word in this koan and every koan in this book: attention. Pay attention to whatever's going on, whether it's external, whether it's internal, it doesn't really matter. Then even things with like boredom, you can examine it, you can look at it, you can feel it, experience it, see where it rises from. And in that process, then you don't get hindered by whatever is going on. You know, that brought up a story for me once. I was doing a 9-day session and I was the timekeeper. And so I was getting up at, you know, 3:15, 3:30 in the morning and going to bed probably about 10 o'clock at night after I closed everything down. And I was climbing the walls. I was just like bored out of my gourd. You know, it's just the same thing over and over and over. And I remember just sitting there and I was going, oh God, there's another 5 days left, you know. And so then I go, okay. You know, what is boredom? You're always saying be one with it, you know, so I'm giving myself a Dharma talk, you know, be one with it. Okay, what does it mean being one with it? Okay, do something that is really boring. Okay, I am going to watch the second hand on the clock and I'm going to watch it tick. You know, I'm going to watch every single second hand. And the funny thing is, as soon as I faced up to the boredom went. And then there was a tremendous stillness there, you know, where the expectation that it should be another way just disappeared simply because I faced up to it, felt it, experienced it, and went through it. So, you know, here in this particular case is that it's not boring at all. You know, there's two people playing with this reality that we have at this moment in time, seeing through these eyes, hearing through these ears. And then they're putting it into a scheme. Like, you know, we use the word practice. What the hell is that? You know, really, what is practice? You know, I mean, is it doing something over and over and over, you know, until something is achieved? Is it being more like a kid? You know, kids naturally just practice. That's something they do because there's a real interest there. You know, they want to move like an adult because they see adults doing certain things. So their hands move all over the place. Is that practice? You know, is practice love? You know, I love life. And it seems that if I look into the nature of life, then, you know, then I see more and I appreciate it more. You know, there's all of these aspects which in many ways, even the word practice is a key to living and how to really bring out the best in the life that each one of us has. So here, you know, the guy's taking him off on a little tangent and he says, do you know characters? Now, of course, Kyozen has invented these 108 characters. So how would you answer that if you were in his place? You know, yeah, I invented them, you know. Yeah, I did this. But no, you know, he's a different kind of person. He goes, yeah, you know, I hold my own. It's beautiful. You know, the inventor is like, you know, it's like Elon Musk going, did you invent, you know, the whatever, the Falcon, whatever? And he goes, you know, most of the people around me did it. I just did a bit, you know. So this shows something of his character as a human being. He doesn't need to be sent to stage, and he's kind of, you know, blowing it off, basically. That reminds me of my Zumiroshi too. You know, sometimes I'd work in the yard doing gardening with him, and we'd work all over the center. In this case, we were working outside the office and the Zendo, and he used to have this little cap that said "I'm retired" on it, and so we're working there, and this guy comes up to the center, and he goes, is this the Zen Center? And he goes, yeah. He goes, is there anyone that can tell me about Zen? and so guess what he says? You know, he goes, you know, go up to the office up there, and they'll tell you about it, you know. And it, you know, so then they would go up, and then they would go out, and then you'd see this head stick through the window. And look down, and they would be like beat red, you know, because here's the Zen master, and they just sent him back up in that way. But it's that thing is, you know, Kyozen doesn't have that puffed upness. You know, he knows himself enough, you know, just let that stuff go. And, you know, yeah, I know, I hold my own, I'm okay at it, you know. Yeah, it's my first rodeo, you know, you put it in American. Anyway, carry on. At that, the monk circled him once. You know, you go, what the hell is that? You know, so he walks around him. And so Kyozen said, drew a character of a cross on the ground. So what relation has a cross got to do with a circle? You know, usually a circle means, again, there's some in-house stuff here. A circle usually means complete. This is complete. So he's going completeness, basically. But he's also walking clockwise, which is a positive way. And so Kyozen just draws a cross. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like with a cross symbolizes unity. I'm not saying just with Christianity, but it symbolizes unity. So he's just puts unity. Great. So good. There's a meeting, this moment in time. You know, we put it in these contexts, and the guy goes, okay, let's stretch it a little bit. So then he walks around him counterclockwise. So, you know, in Buddhism, there's two swastikas. And again, there's no connotations with fascism here. You know, The first swastika is a swastika that is actually I'm doing it like a mirror image, but it's one that is moving counterclockwise, basically. So that symbolizes going against the stream, which is the first part of practice. You know, in practice, we don't immediately unify with whatever's in front of us. Usually, what it is that we examine the world around us and begin to see if the conditioning that we've taken on from the people around us, including our teachers, including our society and what we've been told all the way since we were kids, we examine all of those things and really see if they're true. And it's like with a lot of, say beginning students that have just practiced for a few years, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of grinding that actually goes on between, you know, teachers and students and seniors and juniors and stuff like that, because there's really a sense that, well, you know, it should be a different way. It should be different. It should be more like I want my way in that way, until at some point that's worn out. And I don't mean that in a negative sense. It's just like, you know, okay, I've gone against this, I've done all of this stuff, but it really hasn't changed the reality that's always there. It's not the methods, It's the being in itself, which is the most important thing. But that examination is such an important part of the practice. It's also one of the first symbols in the transmission documents in that way. So, you know, here's Kyozen, on a certain level, he's criticizing this other person. You know, you're saying all this stuff about unity, but you've not even examined it. You've not even looked at it. And so the plot thickens. They get further into this. And again, these are references to where they stand, what they've gone through. In this way, they're labels. You know, like somebody will say to you, yeah, I've been at the center for 25 years. And then you may say, so what? What have you done? You know, these are all labels that go over the top. How have you lived? What's actually occurred? Yeah, I practiced for 40 years now. Again, what have you realized? You know, there's these things, you can't take any of these things as labels. They don't mean anything. But the examination of them is so important in this way. So let's see, where are we now? So he turns into a swastika. The monk drew a circle in the air and raised his palms up to give the appearance of an asura, or a god, or like Atlas supporting the sun and the moon. Now, this is kind of interesting too. In practice, it's not just a matter of, well, I practice and I attend and I come and go. There's that aspect that you never leave practice away from this moment in time, no matter what you're doing. And at some point, you've got to uphold that. You know, whether it's in your life, whether it's in a sangha or a community, or, you know, in yourself, no matter where you are, you really uphold that. You support it moment by moment. And this is the time where all of the Buddhas have now disappeared. They're no longer on the altar. They're here and there. They're around us. So do your part. Support this. If it's valuable to you, really support it. And then it goes on, you know, with this is Kyozen then does, I think it's Kyozen. Yeah, so then Kyozen draws a circle around the swastika. So he goes back to the beginning, to what that guy originally said. Yeah, you got it. That's great. And then the monk gives the appearance of a fierce temple guardian. You know, again, is you're guarding the Dharma, each person, whatever, you know. And you could say, well, this isn't just on a Buddhist level. This is, you are guarding the truth. What is true to you, your heart, what is really real, and don't lose an opportunity to really bring that forward. That's that fierce temple guardian. It's not that they're trying to, you know, look intimidating or whatever. It's just, though, this means a lot to me. This is my life. You know, not that it couldn't be another way, but this is my life. This is important. And then, of course, Kyozen just agrees. He goes, yeah, just so. That's the way it is. You've got practice down now. You know, you're the boss. Bye. You know, I'm glad I don't have to teach you, you know. In that way, Kyozen's lazy. He's lazy right through, thoroughly, you know. Yeah, you teach yourself. I'm good. All right. Well, that's all I've got to say about that koan for now. So if you have got any questions or comments, please, about this nice country play that doesn't quite fit, but it's, you can see they're having fun and they're enjoying themselves.
Right, so you can unmute yourselves. If you can find the raise hand feature, please use that. Otherwise, you can just unmute yourself. You can also ask questions through chat at this time.
Here we go.
Jim.
Hey, Jim, you're on.
Hey. Hey, Rishi, you did.
Hey, thanks for the picture of Thomas.
Yeah, sorry, camera's still not working.
Yeah.
You're talking about the first swastika that goes against the grain.
Yeah.
And examining, you know, dealing with our conditioning.
Yeah.
Dealing with that aspect.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested. I mean, it reminds me in a way also of Dogen saying about studying the way, studying the self.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But could you speak to how it can, I mean, it's presented almost in a more linear way, but could you speak to how that process continues throughout practice and how those dynamics inform each other and work together?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like if you use that word self that Dogen uses, is that that's occurring on a momentary basis, and it's not inside or outside. There's no dividing lines in that process. So that is occurring right from when you're born until you die, and then who knows beyond that point. So the study of the self, which, you know, that word study can also be substituted for practice. You know, it's like I practice the world, I practice the self, I practice whatever circumstance that I'm in. You know, and that's also mastery, because I've never been in this place before, so it's important to practice this. And this realization, not a realization that's going to come in the future or the one that has been in the past. So, you know, if you look at it, to study the ways to study the self, to study the self is to forget the self, or to practice the ways to practice the self, to practice the self is to forget the self. So this practice the self, it doesn't mean that I am practicing what I think myself is, but I am practicing the world that occurs on a momentary basis. Just in the same way, the world is practicing me through temperature. You know, like this early on in the week, it was really hot. Definitely, there was a feeling of being practiced by the world in that way, and practicing in the midst of it. You know, there's not those dividing lines that we tend to put into place and hold them like concrete. You know, it's just like, I find myself in this position. What is it? And that's new, and it's occurring, you know, over and over and over. I don't know if that's answering it, but if you've got a different slant that you'd like me to talk about, or you have yourself, please share.
Yeah, I guess I'm interested in, I mean, it's just really what I'm working with at the moment, personally, in terms of dealing with difficulties. And yeah. I think I'm seeing in myself a habit almost to, say, identify with the second swastika, the sense of flow.
Yeah.
And then maybe ignoring the first one, you know.
Yeah.
It's almost like seeing the rocks in the river and just kind of pretending they're not there.
Yeah.
Rather than going back to the thing of just being present with whatever's coming up, if I like it or not.
Yeah, and again, you know, it isn't linear. When you need to use that action against the flow, then use it. It's a tool. You know, there's no saying that, well, I'm at this stage now. That's one of the things that Dogen talked about, is that you don't need ranks and stages, even though in the thing that you're quoting, there's ranks and stages, but they're tools too, you know. And again, is that in everybody's practice, there's points where we hold on to certain things because we feel we should be there, rather than using whatever tools are at hand, you know. So what I'm saying is that it's not necessarily a linear process.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's some precedent to this too, is that people like Koryu Roshi counted his breath his entire life. A lot of people would say that's just basic practice, but he went through koan study, and that's what he did. He did that. You know, I've known other masters like Kusan Sanim worked on mu his entire life. He went through koan study. That was his basic practice. Maizumi Roshi, Shikantaza, myself, Shikantaza. You know, but then it's using whatever's there. Now, you know, like we play soccer, and then one of the things is that I do is that if I'm not hitting the ball in the way that I want to hit the ball, then I go back to basics over and over and over. So if something's useful there, then I just reapply it until I'm getting the desired result or close to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up Kari Ureshi. Mm-hmm. I was looking back through Appreciate Your Life, the Maizumi Ureshi book, and
yeah,
he quoted Kari Ureshi saying, when I breathe in and swallow the whole universe.
Yeah.
And when I breathe out the whole universe.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really like that.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's seemingly a very simple practice, but to really do that, and especially in difficult times, to breathe in and swallow the whole universe.
Yeah.
I don't always feel even brave enough to try that.
Yeah. Well, you know, breathe in difficulty and breathe it out. You know, you don't have to do anything so highfalutin. It's just the way it is. The thing is that aspect of, you know, the Buddha's stuck axle wheel, if something's not quite right, you'll see your part in it. And examine that and really look at it. But when it's hard, it's just hard. And then, you know, like for myself, and I know other people, is that we wish it was another way. But, you know, everything in our lives has a season. And I don't mean, you know, like a few minutes. I mean a season. It takes a while for us to process and actually learn from those things and then come out the other side with a different appreciation. And it's important to go through that process because that's how we get close to others. And that's how we master these things that arise in the human condition, like difficulties, like greed, anger, ignorance, you know, all of these aspects. They have to be felt right through to the bone, and then we can deal with them in direct and immediate ways. And words don't reach it. I'm sorry. You know.
Thank you. I mean, I guess part of my first question with the swastikas too was just for me, more of a sense of how the two aren't necessarily different either. You know, it seems like they're contradictory movements.
But
by addressing those places where, say, I feel more stuck, then I realize that is, again, nothing but the flow in the same direction as everything else. You know, they're not two different things.
Yeah. Now, it's kind of interesting, you know, in the transmission documents, the second swastika, which is going with the flow, has one difference, which it has the character for my heart, mind, shin in the middle of it in red. So this going along with the flow of things, in that feeling for the people and environment around us, you know, that's the main difference in that way. And of course, like you're saying, if you can have the shin in that first one, but usually in terms of process, it isn't in that part, you know. And again, we're talking about symbolism of practice in itself. That's for everybody. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Winston, go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, Winston.
Hi. A couple things. I'm still having a little bit of difficulty with the longer sitting periods, maybe more than 15 minutes. But I was wondering what you thought about guided meditations.
I don't like them because I'm pretty independent, you know. I mean, I remember when I was first starting, people would start talking about, you should follow your breath and bring yourself back. And I'm going, oh, shut up. You know, I know how to do that, you know. But if it helps you be present, then use it. You know, that's the thing is, but it's more of a personality thing, is that use your own personality and what best really works for you, you know. And in time, your concentration will evolve at its own pace, and you'll find what really is the best for you as a human being.
I find myself like doing, you know, able to do things like, you know, 2 minutes or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I can do a lot of those, but when I can do it back to back, 2 to 3 to 5, and then maybe even 12 or something, but but to sit for one 15-minute thing or one 20-minute thing.
Yeah.
I think for some reason it's I'm a little less motivated to do the longer ones for some reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of it is knowing your own pace too. You know, so don't try and work at somebody else's pace, because you can put yourself off, and then, you know, then you won't sit, you know. So just look at how you want to develop your own practice, then try and go along those lines. I mean, one of the difficulties nowadays is not being able to sit in social conditions where, you know, basically you've got that support of sitting with other people. And so it's more difficult, you know, it's more difficult to move. And that can really help you in many ways. But there's nothing that says you should sit for this amount of time. If you sit for 2 or 3 minutes, great. But then don't immediately sort of allow all your thoughts to invade again. Just try and be present to whatever's going on. If you go for a walk, do the same thing. And in time, that will help. Now, if you're getting physical difficulties with sitting, is when you do things like work on the computer, sit, you know, cross-legged, or how you sit in meditation. When you watch TV, do the same thing. And in time is that your body will adjust to long periods of sitting. Now, if it's your mind, just try and be present wherever you are. Because that's not dependent on posture.
When you say be present, you mean kind of like the attention to your breath?
Yeah, okay. Or, you know, just look around you and make sure you're here. you're not off in some other realm in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in time, you know, that begins to take over, because if you practice being present, then you're not practicing thinking of something else in some other time. And so its grip over you begins to drop. And that's usually the thing that causes the most suffering, is that, you know, as much as I'm here now, you know, then part of my mind's in Hawaii, you know, drinking a daiquiri or something, you know, which it isn't there. So I suffer because I'm not there. I'm here, you know, on that level. And so the introduction that there is another reality is a problem for us as human beings, because we begin to believe the one that we think we should be having rather than the one that's here. Now, in time, what, you know, the real positive in this is we become a lot more able to really deal with our environment in whatever way, whatever arises. Simply, we're not going, well, it should be this way, it should be that way, a person like me shouldn't be. You know, we're dealing directly with the circumstance and situation, because that's what's happening.
Got it.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to read this question in chat from Omar. How is Mu practiced? Any good places to start? I understand Mu as null or empty set. Is this accurate?
No. Mu. No, actually, you know, the main thing with Mu is, you know, it's implicit in the koan itself, which goes, does a dog have Buddha nature? And implicit in that is the fact that if you don't understand that if a dog has Buddha nature or not, is that you don't understand whether you have Buddha nature. So the important thing is that nature, which is occurring on a momentary basis, is look into that. Now, you know, in China and Japan, they use that word wu, which is Chinese, mu, which is Japanese, and then, you know, even in this country, there's a few contemporary teachers, and I've talked with them about it. They use the word no instead. So any kind of scheme that you raise up, no, put it on one side, experience directly what's going on. No, and it's a great tool in that way. Mu has no intrinsic value. You know, it's just how you cut away things until you see what's really at the base of one's own being. Once you encounter this, then that's a very wonderful thing. You're not thrown off who you are as a human being, or as a being in that way. So always when working on Mu or No, it's the place that you stand at this moment in time. That's always the entrance. That's always the gate right now. Never another time, never another place, never ideal conditions, always now.
Does this have something to do with the concept of no self or
There's not a conflict there. You know, the thing is that do you do things that where you're unaware of them?
Sure.
Yeah, me too. You know, and the thing is that's no self right there. Right. Doesn't mean my mind's elsewhere. Is that's always here 24/7? The one that pumps around the blood, that blinks the eyes, that grows the hair, that, you know, this is going on moment by moment. But what we do is we say self is the story that goes around it. You know, so then we get confused because, well, I've got this story, and yet quite often as human beings, we go well beyond the story as who we are. We surprise ourselves. We disappoint ourselves. You know, there's all of these things that are occurring, you know. I mean, I was talking with one of the members, and we were talking about something like no self. And I remember watching my son playing basketball, and I'm finding myself bouncing the ball. I don't have a ball, but I'm doing this. You know, I'm just so identified with what's going on there. And then suddenly, you know, I look around, and oops, you got all the other mums and dads there watching, you know. But it's that thing is where you identify and you lose yourself in whatever's there. It's always here. But, you know, we always want to observe something going on. And that's where we get confused, is that we're functioning 24/7 as this one that is immediately identifying and interacting with our environment, but we choose our story over the top of it.
Thank you, Roshi.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question as a mm-hmm. follow up to Winston's question?
Yeah.
So my practice, I'm very fortunate that I can sustain kind of a long period of practice.
Yeah.
I think that's just the privilege of where I am and my whatever
yeah.
I think my own ability is, I guess, of concentration.
Mm-hmm.
But my practice is primarily lying down.
Yeah.
I feel like when I sit, especially for like a really prolonged period of time, like 40 minutes to an hour,
yeah.
I feel like the blood flow to my legs feels very restricted, and it doesn't feel mm-hmm. like very natural. I start to get some pains in my hips.
Yeah.
I understand that maybe that's part of,
yeah, it
of
is.
What my practice should entail.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, is there anything wrong with one posture over the other? So with sitting versus lying down?
You know, the main thing is, you know, again, the one who sees through these eyes, that's not got nothing to do with posture. Mm-hmm. You know, so that can be practiced anywhere and any time. Now, the thing with sitting in postures is energetically, you know, vertical postures, straight back, and in the long run, it's really good to sit like that because it's less stress on your body. You know, I mean, obviously lying down there's not much stress on your body in that way, but you tend to be more alert with the vertical postures. And then also you learn the difference between mentally produced pain, you know, like, oh, my legs are going to fall off, you know, I'm going to die here, you know, and then you get up and you find you can walk fine. And then actual pain. And that's really good in daily life too, because it doesn't just work on the level of physical pain. It works on the level of like, relationships, you know, like if you're having a painful relationship, you know, you can face up to that and you can deal with it because you're used to facing up to pain. You don't need to run away from it. So it has those values of it too. And, you know, the whole sort of cosmology that goes around the various sitting positions, it's basically you're bringing a lot of your energy centers, like bottoms of your feet, your hara, or the places that energy is produced from food, etc. They're all together in one area, and so there's a sort of physiological strength that is developed in that process. So I would say veer on that, but ultimately it doesn't really matter. I mean, I meditate, or I don't like to use the word meditate that much. I'd be present to whatever's there, and that's because I'm really interested in living in itself. And then with that presence, you know, so much enters into that presence, and I'm never away from my own life in that way. I don't get lost in that way.
Thanks very much, Rick. I appreciate it.
Yeah, probably more than you wanted to know, but there you go. Yeah.
Not at all. It's just exactly what I wanted to know. Thank
Great.
You.
Great. Thank you.
Good summer. I don't see any other questions right now.
No more questions. Okay.
Is that Russell?
Hi, Russell.
Hi, Roshi. I appreciate you taking my question. I've sat in on several of your talks. I was struck today by the line that said something along the lines of the self is neither within nor without.
Yeah.
I find myself sitting with that during the talk as I'm in conflict with someone, and the details of the conflict are not important, but sort of the conflict has come up that in this setting I feel like I've come to value introspection and meditation. I feel gets at that, but I'm having these thoughts come up that is introspection finding the self, or is the self to be found elsewhere, or where is the self, and what is this practice?
Yeah, I mean, those are great questions. That's the basis of human spirituality, especially looking at those lines where the self and others begin, And then obviously in terms of when you have a conflict with somebody else, is that if you can, if you can have that feeling that, that we're in this together, how can this work out for the best, and then communicate in accord with a good outcome. I don't mean suppress things, but how can things be communicated in a way the other person can take it? How can we end up on the same page? And even if we disagree, know that there's an open door there so that a dialogue can continue, and maybe the situation at some point can be resolved, Because I know what happens when that doesn't occur. It's not very good,
Yes, it's unpleasant.
Whereas there's an open door, and it can improve, and that there's a chance of communication,
Yeah, I appreciate it. I was just really struck today by it kind of led me down the path of thinking about intellectualizing introspection and intellectualizing practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is that we can look in, you don't find much, and you can look out, you see a lot, but the thing is, all of these parts are available to us as human beings. It's just as you look, don't look for something else, then the clarifying comes in, and again, our prejudices to life begin to drop off, and we see life as it is, and that makes it a lot easier to deal with people and things.
Thank you for taking my question, Roshi.
Oh, no, I mean that's why we're doing the Q&A. If you didn't do that, I wouldn't have much, Mind you, I could leave early, But on that hand, I'm at home, Where would I go?
They could just all be A's without Q's.
What was that?
There could just be a lot of A's without Q's.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Thank you.